Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, very inspirational story coming up. Joe West is a award-winning song producer and has won Grammys and everything else, and writer as well, along with Gabe Adams is coming. Gabe is a fella that was born with no arms and no legs and, believe it or not, dances and sings and is a real inspiration and a motivation for everyone who listens. So please give this a listen and share it with somebody, because I think this is a real important piece of information we're going to spread around for you here. First, there is LifeLock. Over 26 million people have their DNA in one of the four major testing providers' databases, which are vulnerable. And many companies are vulnerable, and people are going to get that DNA info, and they could target you, and hackers are going to use that and sell it on the dark web. It's important to understand how cybercrime is affecting our lives. Identity theft's another serious issue. Somebody's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. You could miss identity threats if you only monitor your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock, which detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information, they'll send you an alert. And if there's a problem, their agents will work to fix it. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one prevents all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam. That's promo code Adam at LifeLock.com for up to 25% off.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. 2020 is here, and another year of Adam's Monthly Nut is about to bust. This month's shipment includes a Mr. Burcham tape measure, so you can remember the horrors of the jungle while marking that 2x4. A Wallet Ninja credit card multi-tool. There will come the time you will save the day with it. A sack of Aussie's famous flank steak seasoning, so you can make your meat taste just like Aussie's. And as always, a bottle of your choosing. This $60 value is yours for only $25. Sign up for 1 month or keep the shipments coming. So prep your mail's box and get ready for Adam's Monthly Nut.
I see the dark clouds wrap around you. Fear is welling up in your eyes. The only way you're gonna break through is to fight. So climb to what's up in the clouds and fly. No, there ain't no shame in falling down. When you get to where you're going, there's a joy you'll find in knowing that you did it. And that thing you thought you couldn't do becomes a part of you, part of you.
Joe West and Gabe Adams are both in studio. Joe's the producer and Gabe's the talent. And it's a very interesting story. They have a short film I'll tell you about in a second. So we'll start with Joe. Joe, brag about yourself for 2 minutes.
That's always the worst part of doing these things.
Right? Oh, go ahead. Pretend you're drunk. Pretend I'm hot and you're drunk.
Yeah, I've done that before. I got started in the music business early, and over the course of 30 years, you end up eventually, if you show up every day and try to do something really great, there's only a matter of time before the window opens and something gets through when you put one by the goalie. So I've been lucky enough to have that happen. Mixing hit records, writing hit songs, be involved in creative projects that you do because it's the reason you got into the business, right? So you try to imagine yourself as like, oh, why did I start doing this? And so you try to stay true to that. And if you do that, eventually you have some success. And I've been lucky enough to do that.
Yeah, I think people underestimate, as I step back and look at everyone's career, not in music, but like for me in comedy, and I just realize, just hang in. Just do it every day. Just be there. Just being there. Time passes, and at some point, you've had a career. There's not that much pixie dust to it.
It's a war of attrition, and it's like, if you don't love what you do, you won't be willing to get up every day and do it.
Right.
So it's like, for me as a songwriter, which can be a despair, just a humiliating year after year tool of rejection, you have to say all the songs at the end of the year, the songs are worth it, and they're the payback when you get to listen back to them. And eventually, every once in a while, one of those goes out and gets cut by somebody and shows up on the radio.
Yeah, well, like I said, Shakira and Justin Timberlake and Warren Zevon and Keith Urban, all that. So it worked. Gabe, explain, you have a rare medical condition.
Yes.
Can you pronounce that for us?
It is Hanhart syndrome, H-A-A-N, heart syndrome. And it is just a rare birth defect that happens to people born without arms and legs sometimes.
So the arm from the shoulder down?
There's nothing there.
The leg from?
The bum down. There's nothing there.
You're pretty mobile.
Yes.
And I've also seen video of you dancing.
Yes, I was a dancer back in the days, and I still somewhat do dance.
This was, I guess, at an event, and there were cheerleaders and folks like out on the floor, and then you're coming up in the middle.
Featured.
Sort of hopping and flopping and breaking. And
yes.
Hopping and locking.
I don't know if you can twerk at
I
all.
I can twerk. I have a Brazilian booty for a reason.
It's pretty damn impressive. I don't know. We're looking at tape from Inside Edition, but I guess you guys can find it on YouTube. So you've been this way since Jump Street.
Yes.
And you're born in Brazil?
Yes.
And you were adopted from a family out here?
Yes, a Utah family.
Mormon family?
Yes. There are 13 other siblings that I have, but they're all biological to my adopted parents.
And they're all biological?
Mm-hmm. I'm the only adopted.
Wow. So when I heard, I got to readjust.
13 kids, 48 limbs.
When I heard about all the siblings, I'm like, oh, this family just adopts, just adopts a lot of kids. But you're the only one out of that whole group.
Yeah.
That's got to feel pretty damn special out of 13
sure.
kids.
Yes.
Oh, these people are saints.
Of course. You'd have to meet them.
I would. The problem with adopted parents is they're either saints or monsters. 10% of them are monsters. There's no like, yeah, come see, come saw. My adopted parents are fine. Fair to middle. They're the most horrible people in the world, and they're adopting people for a reason, or they're the best people in the world. Yeah. They had the best heart and best motives and best reasons. So, they got you at what age?
8 months old.
How old were they? No. 8 months old, and no limbs. So this is a very tall order for them, I imagine.
For sure. They had no idea what they were getting themselves into, but we had help, and we got it all figured out.
And I always wonder about the biological kids. You know, there's a part that is like, oh, they're super good with it. And then there's a part where they're kids and you're stealing some of the attention of their parents. And there's a resentment. How did the biological kids work with you?
I actually have a brother who is the same age as me. He's just a month younger than me. And he's 6'7" tall. And we have grown up together. But one rule that we made was that we would never be in the same classrooms together because we didn't want to fight over him being in my shadow. But our senior year, we ended up having a little heart-to-heart moment, and he just was very open. He said, you know what, Gabe, I don't like you. And I said, oh, really? Okay. And he said, I'm jealous of you, and I feel like I've lived in your shadow for the last 18 years. And I said, okay. And then I said, well, that's never what I wanted. Nor did I ever want my life to be the Gabe show and block every other sibling out of the family and everything like that. And so then we just came to that we both have a lot of things in common and that we don't need to outshine the other and that we can work together to get ahead in the same differences that we want.
Well, by nature of the disease you're born with, you're going to steal a ton of focus.
Of course.
And it's not your fault, and it's not the sibling's fault, and it's not the people who are stealing or giving you the attention's fault either. It's just that's our wiring. That's the way it's gonna work. And then especially if you're going to do things that are pretty extraordinary for somebody who is missing their limbs, like be pretty, I mean, you're pretty self-sufficient, right?
Yes. I was always taught to never let anybody do anything for me, and I needed to find out a way to do it on my own. And so I actually traveled to New York City all by myself this last September to walk as a model in New York Fashion Week.
Wow.
Wow.
Do you live on your own?
I do not live on my own currently. I live with one of my older brothers, and I babysit part-time his four kids.
You know, this it's why I always go nuts. I go nuts when I hear politicians, and they're going, you know, we don't have a level playing field. You know, the people over here that don't, aren't part of the middle class. And it's like, you can do whatever you want if you want to do it. You may have to burn more calories than Joe Biden's son. You may. You may. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't burn the calories. Right. That doesn't mean you can't do it. There's no, like, you know, a lot of people don't have access to. You have access to whatever you have access to, and you'll find access to it. Or you become a victim, and you stay home, and you wither and rot. I'm tired of that being spoon-fed to everyone. I mean, look at you. You have no limbs, and yet you just go about your life.
Of course. It's what I've been taught.
Not just go about it, but like excel, do extraordinary things.
Right.
When you were taught, which obviously is a wonderful thing to look back on because it made you who you are today, saying, don't help him, he has to figure out a way. Hearing that as a young kid who hasn't figured out all the ways to get around and maneuver, was that hurtful?
Yes, but my parents just always told me to look at it in a bigger picture and think about what my future could be like if I was independent and I was doing things on my own, and the money and time that I would save to have my own privacy when I was older. And now I look back at that all, and I'm so beyond thankful and grateful that my parents instilled that in me at such a young age and have made me want to be better and do better and be stronger.
Okay. You had... what I now think of is sort of, we're always talking about like, oh, this white privilege or male privilege or gay or straight, so this privilege, but the ultimate privilege, two parents who cared, two parents who stayed together and focused on you and taught you, you know, when to do it for yourself and when they had to come in, and just intact people who cared teaching you. That's the ultimate privilege, and no one really talks about is an intact family that gives half a shit. I now, Gabe. Sorry, Joe. Parents divorced. Alcohol.
My parents have been married for 60 years.
Wow.
Yeah,
the ultimate. All his limbs and all the nuptials.
And I tell people before, you know, I'll play a song about my father, and I'll tell people the story of how I was so mad at my dad, because I guess that's part of what you do.
Right.
But, you know, I just turned 50, and I called my father and mother and apologized to both of them this last year, because it was like, I really had a great life. I had everything that I needed. And had I not had them, I would have the excuse to go do whatever, fail, or show low character. You know, I try to live my life the way in the old days, I try to make decisions my dad wouldn't make, do the opposite. But slowly I've turned over to like, hey, I want to actually take advantage of the life that I've been sort of grown up in. And, you know, I make decisions now based off of what my father would do.
How did you two come together, you and Gabe?
I was on Facebook scrolling. And I saw a video. He had a video on Facebook that had like 126 million views.
Yeah, now it's over like 200 million views.
It was a lot. And it was stunning. You know, as you go by, it's one of those things like, oh, click on this. And he's making macaroni and cheese in this video and going down the stairs. And you know, I watched it. And my takeaway from it was, oh, I want more what that guy has. I don't know what that is. I see a little bit of it myself. You know, I try to do that. You know, I work in an industry that's a lot of rejection. But it's like, oh, if I had more of what he had, well, then I'd be able to be more successful more of the times. So if I just could follow through and just keep on doing it, not take no for an answer. And I just thought, man, I'm going to reach out to him. So I sent you a Facebook message, right?
Yeah.
We started talking, and it was just out of admiration, because I wanted more of what he had and just wanted to tell him how inspired I was. You know, I didn't look at the video and say, oh, man, that poor guy. I looked at it and said, man, that poor guy being me, you know, I want more of what he has. I was jealous of it. And I just started to – we started talking and FaceTiming. And I said, do you sing? And he said, yeah, I sing, you know. And he sent me a couple of voice memos that were really good. And I said, do you ever write a song? And he said, yeah, you know, I'd like to. I'd keep them to myself. So he started sending me songs. And then we said, man, let's just go out and have an adventure and see what it's all about. I have a little small audio engineering and producing school called the Apprentice Academy. And it's, you know, the philosophy of it is like, hey – this is what you need to succeed. It's like, we'll teach you all the technology so that you're competent coming out of the 16-week program. But what you really need to succeed in the music business is being like Gabe. It's like finding a way to just keep at it until you push something a little hard enough that it moves a little bit. So we decided to make this little documentary that was just sort of an excuse for us to spend time together and live our lives, because we're uncommon friends. I'm 50. He's 21. He lives in Utah. He's a Mormon. I live in Tennessee. You know, it's just, it's not your standard friendship. So
Limitless Adventure Songwriting, which is available now on YouTube, if I got that right.
Yeah.
And
probably the easiest way to find it would be to go to inspired-docs.com, because it's embedded on that page. And with the B in it, it's, everyone's like, you have to give them like a page of notes to find it.
The you know, it's interesting that you were looking at Gabe and sort of going, I want more of that. It just made me think, you know, you always hear these stories where you only use 4% of your brain or whatever it is. And I'm always a little dubious when I hear that, but I'm like, whatever it is. But maybe they're just telling you that to say work harder, do more. But like, you kind of think, how much of your body are you using and how much of your life are you using?
Yeah.
And there are plenty of people that have four limbs and all the strength in the world that aren't really using their life. They're not really using their body. And Gabe's out there eating every part of the buffalo with what he's doing. And, you know, if Gabe's using 90% of his life, you just got to get from 35% to 50. And that would be like a big gain. And I think people who inspire us, that's kind of what they're doing. They're saying, you know, the amount of effort you have to put in to go down the stairs and make mac and cheese is very different than the amount of effort I used to call Grubhub and tell them to bring it up the stairs. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think what you're inspiring folks to do is to start using more of their life and more of their body.
I think the outcome of it is like, hey, it's an extraordinary thing to watch, because we go write the song out in Utah and then come to Nashville and make a record on it. So it's compelling on that respect. But the bigger story is like, hey, what if I did something that I was afraid to do? Mm-hmm. What if I, you know, I know I didn't try to do that whenever I graduated from college, but what if I went ahead and did it anyhow and was unafraid? Half of it is being unafraid and being willing to pursue and fail and fall.
And also, almost every story I hear about relationships is, oh, I just reached out to this person and got a hold of them, mm-hmm. and then I gave them this, and then they responded. There's not that much magic or mystery to it. Most people, when you reach out to them, are flattered that you reached out to them, and then they respond, and the next thing you know, you're having some relationship.
Easy to get a hold of them. Like, you think, like, oh, this guy, it's like, he's probably got a whole crew of people staffing an office, filtering his emails.
He does, brothers and sisters.
There's 13 of them staff.
14 of them, right? But, you know, here's the other thing that's cool. So Gabe was 20 when we did this. He had never really written a song. He had never really sung, let alone in a recording studio under the microscope. He didn't know me, and yet he was unafraid to say yes for me to come out to Utah and travel 400 miles down to Bryce Canyon and have this adventure. It's like, no wasn't in his vocabulary. He didn't put the period at the end of that sentence, which is like, I try to compel the guys I'm teaching in this little school to say, like, hey, just like, don't put a period there. Extend the conversation. Try to find a way to have something. Because as a creator, you always need media coming at you. When I stop as a creator, it's like I have to wait to catch the next wave if it's coming in. But if I continually, if I find myself to be uninspired, I just try to get movement in one direction and then have some experience with that. And I was blown away that a guy that young was willing to undertake that thing, because he's under a microscope. He could fail miserably as a songwriter. He could fail miserably in the recording studio and sound horrible. And so he was just unafraid. And that is the epitome of what's great about him. And if we all had a little bit more of that, well, then we'd probably end up succeeding a lot more.
Well, I always kind of tell people always say, what made you decide to do? And then they just go X, Y, and Z. And I go, I didn't decide to do anything. Somebody asked me if I want to do it. I just didn't say no.
Right.
I just said yes. And then before you know it, you've done a whole bunch of stuff that you didn't decide to do. You just didn't say no. Stop saying no to everything. Just go, yeah, fine.
Yeah, I don't think there's any big breaks. As a kid, I thought I was waiting for my big break. But I found out my big break was just showing up every day. You know? And then over the course of 30 years of it, every once in a while, like they say, if you look down at your broken watch, it's right twice a day. So at a certain point, so they're going to catch it, and it's going to be right. And it's like, you just show up and keep doing it. And don't be afraid of an experience because you're afraid you're going to fail at it. I think if people left this documentary seeing Gabe, I want to take that away from myself and make my life better. I took my 15-year-old son along. This is the film crew in this. Sean's over there. Gabe, me, and my 15-year-old son did this whole film on our own. And it was like, I wanted my son to see it. I wanted to see it. I want the guys at my school to see it. And I think, and I hope that if somebody watches it, it'd be a great story to hear somebody say, hey, man, that thing, I watched that movie, and then I ended up going ahead and doing something that I was afraid to do, and it ended up working out.
Yeah. You know, somebody tweeted me, I guess it was an article for maybe the Wall Street Journal or something, but they were talking about young girls and they're committing suicide because they're worried about climate change, they're worried about school shootings, they're worried about the environment, the water. Right. Like, we've got them, everyone worried about everything, and at some point people just put a bunch of pills in their mouth and stop worrying. And I thought, whatever we're doing to people, telling them to worry about this and, you know, seeing people off to school and telling them to worry about school shooting when there's really nothing they could do about it, is obviously it's completely random and statistically it's not going to happen, but sort of putting it up in their head. We need to do something other than getting everyone to worry about everything, especially stuff they don't have any control over. And instead of that, and I don't mean empower them, just I like the thing of, like, who are you to say no? Like, what's so good about you that you can say no to something?
I was always afraid as a young kid that I was going to make the wrong decision.
Right.
And then there was a lot of levity put on all these decisions. And then I heard a pastor talk about how God was omniscient and he could look down a wagon wheel and see your life being born and in the middle of your life and dying and, you know, the whole course of your life in one glance. And the analogy of it really brought peace to me because I'm like, hey, what if I just lived the best version of the life every day and didn't worry about, like, what's going to happen if this decision is the wrong decision? But what if I just showed up every day and was the best version, tried to be the best version I could be that day? It's like it took all the pressure off knowing that maybe there is a pre-planned destiny in your life. And maybe if there isn't, this is a good way to live, because I couldn't handle really the levity of, like, making a decision at 22 that was going to be one that I'd be working at 20 years later in some dead-end job. So
yeah,
that gave me a lot of peace.
Well, it's an interesting balance, the balance between having a plan and moving forward. I've always been a little bit of a move forward mode. I was leaving the comedy store last night, and I was talking to Matt DeAndrea, and I said, well, now I'm accepted at the comedy store as one of the regulars. And he goes, what's the plan? And I'm like, plan is to get respect as a stand-up comedian. And he's like, but then what? Like, you want to sell out bigger venues? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? I'm like, plan is move forward, get respect of peers, have established myself in this environment. And I don't, the people who have a plan, I don't begrudge those people. The problem is when you have a plan and it doesn't work out, you tend to quit because you had this thing versus
or
my plan.
Pivot.
My plan, your plan shouldn't be lose 20 pounds in 20 days. Your plan should be work out and eat right every day. And then I bet it works out.
Yeah.
I have this feeling that if your plan is move forward, it'll magically work out. It's not very glamorous, attractive. And the reality is most people don't want that. They don't want the diet and exercise part of life. Like, they just don't want that part where you go, look, there's no fads, there's no plans, there's no deal of meals, and it's just eat better and start working out. It's like, that's too boring. Like,
that's how it works.
I need something that's bedazzled to go after. But it's like that life is exquisitely boring for even like Jimmy Kimmel. He has a boring life in a sense that his thing is go to work. Just get up and go to work. Just answer emails, write jokes. There's not that much. They're not those wild swings that everyone thinks is in, or produce songs, or write songs, or record songs, or make docs, or do whatever. It's just get up and go. I don't think people understand that part, and I don't think they like the part where glamorous jobs are really just boring jobs that, where you get paid more.
Well, that's why I think if you do something you love and you show up for the love of what you do and there's some creative outlet for you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then it's like it's easy to accept the failure that is most probable. And every once in a while, if you get one, you know, that charts or has a, it becomes a big hit, well, then it's gravy. But I could never show up if it was like reliant upon having another hit.
I was talking to a guy who I've known for a long time, and he's like a struggling singer-songwriter, and he's like, I said, well, I'm going out. I'm doing stand-up for free. You should get out. You should just play for free. And he's like, well, I can't. You can afford it. I can't afford it. You know, and I was like, you can't afford to go out on Wednesday night and just play three songs? Why? What's my income half? You're not working during that time. Of course you can afford it. You're making excuses, in other words. And you're working it out. Like, I'll do this if I get that. Right. Well, the answer is there is no guarantees. You write 1,000 songs and not one of them could ever be played on the radio. Believe
actual me. Statistic.
I'm a John Hyatt fan. I understand.
Yeah. Well, in a town like Nashville, that's what we do every day is we write songs and pile them up in the middle music row. And it's like it's frustrating to write thousands of songs and have a win factor like that. At one point in my career, I was having a number one for every 100 songs I wrote, which probably now is an incredible number.
Like, it's a high rate.
People would want that.
Right.
You know, but it doesn't take into account that I wrote thousands of songs before I moved to town, you know?
The 99 songs that didn't make it were all called yada, 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 next. Yada, okay, next. Let's
this
get
one's
to that
called
100.
Not a hit, let's move on.
Yes, you must do it because you do it. You must do it because that's what you do. I think people take it a little too far. They go, you got to do it because you love it. It's like, I don't know if you got to do it because you love it. You just got to do it because that's what you do. But you can't work it out in advance.
I think for me, if I didn't love it, I see the laziness in myself. I know I'm wired that way, that I'll either be on the couch for 6 months or I'll be out working 20 hours a day. So in the out of the fear of being that guy on the couch, I get up and do the other thing.
Well, that's an interesting point, which I always hear my friend Dennis Prager, a talk show host, talk about, which is he does everything. He travels every weekend. He speaks everywhere. And he's like, because I'm inherently lazy. Yeah. I know I'm lazy and I have to fight it. I will take that date on this weekend because I know if you leave me alone, I'll be on the sofa watching TV. So I'm going to go do it. And you end up as a person, it feels like their core is lazy, because I feel like my core is lazy, and a lot of motivated people feel like their core is lazy, and they're going to go fight it every day, and it ends up, you end up living a life that's motivated.
Yeah. Out of fear.
Yeah.
Which is fine by me. Well,
out of fear of becoming that thing you are at your core, or you used to be. I don't know, because at a certain point, it's as if. I mean, you're living that life. That's who you are. Brian, you're making noises.
No, fear's a great motivator. Whatever it takes to motivate, you know what I mean? Fear of failure, fear of whatever, of letting someone down, your family, your kids, whatever.
Well, have fear. You should.
Fear is like another word for responsibility. You know what I mean? Like, I'm afraid I'm not going to pay the mortgage this month or whatever that version of rent, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, that's your responsibility.
Well, you know what I think as I had a little revelation today. Fear yourself a little bit. Like, don't worry about the boss and don't worry about the cops and don't worry about whomever, the IRS. Like, fear yourself. Have a little fear in yourself. And I was thinking about it because I showed up at one of my job sites and one of the guys I told to, you know, there's a back office and had a bunch of junk in it. It was like storage. I was like, take everything out of the office, organize the office. And I showed up about 10:30, and I wouldn't call it a surprise visit, but I'm kind of all over the place. No one really knows my schedule exactly. And I come pulling in, and he's sitting in his truck in the parking lot eating a taco. And it's like 10:20 in the morning.
Taco
and
time.
I drive right
second
past
lunch.
Him, and I'm like, geez, I wonder how the organizing is going on that office back there. I bet not a lot's getting done now. And then he comes in, and he goes, oh, sorry, I was hungry. I wanted a taco. And I was like, yeah, I didn't yell at him, but I was like, yeah, okay, you just got caught, essentially. He knew he was caught because lunch is at 12 and breakfast is whenever you want breakfast, but 10:20, those are prime work hours. And he knows he got popped, and it was random. I'm not normally around, but I popped in, and I thought, all right, he got popped, and he just thought I got popped, and then we didn't have to have a conversation. He got it. But I thought to myself, don't worry about me, worry about you. Don't worry about me policing you. Yes, you may get away with this 50 times in a row, and then maybe you'll get caught on the 51st time, or maybe you'll never get caught. But you're never going to be that person who just works because you work, because that's what you do. We all know the people, and I have guys who work for me. And when you do it, when you do like kind of blue collar work, it becomes super tangible. Like you can see people that are working or not working. If you're writing a song, maybe you're thinking of something. Maybe you're maybe there's pornography pouring through your skull. But either way, when it's physical work, you see the people are working. And I have guys, they just work because they work. They don't need you there. They don't need you watching. They work for the sake of working. There's some sort of nobility in working. And then there are other guys who are like, all right, the boss is leaving. Let's take a load off. And now you're having these separate modes. Like, here's what I do when people are watching. Here's how I act when people aren't watching. Uh-oh, I got caught. Somebody saw me when I didn't think that. Just have a mode. It's basically pick up your dog shit, not because the neighbor sees the dog shitting on their lawn, just because that's what you do. Yeah. It's a better life, and you don't have to wrestle with yourself that much. And you never really have to worry about, did the boss show up? Did he leave? Is he gone? How long is he gone? Like, what's he going to see? Yeah. What's going to find? Just have the one mode. It's a better mode. Sorry for getting preachy. Mode. So, Gabe, what is... you do motivational speaking.
Yes, I've been doing that for 5 years now.
What kinds of groups do you speak to?
I talk to big corporate, I talk to church, and I talk to schools.
And you go all around the country.
Yes.
And do you start off with a joke?
I kind of do. I come out on stage and I fall down and I say, sometimes in life we fall down, but we have to decide to get back up, whether that's physically, mentally, or emotionally. And the best part is that we don't always have to get back up on our own. And then I'll lay there for a second. I say to the audience, so do you think I should do the rest of my talk laying down or should I get back up? And then I'll give them a second to respond and then I'll rock myself up. And then I go into my speech.
You rock. I mean, you do. God, you must have a hell of a core.
We were just talking about that today.
Abs of steel.
It's all core work with you, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you just pull yourself up like literally like from your core. And you get around with the aid of a wheelchair sometimes, but you also just sort of get around, right?
For sure. A lot of the times I'm usually just on my own walking around and stuff like that. Because when I was younger, I was met by an older guy who was in a wheelchair and he was way heavier. And he said, don't ever get used to your wheelchair. Otherwise, you will turn out like me. So then my parents just said, okay, don't use your wheelchair in the house. Don't use your wheelchair where you don't need it. Use your body and find ways to do it.
Do you have a fully formed pelvis?
Mm-hmm.
So the muscles are obviously just like a person's muscles.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because we just saw a picture of you, Mr. June, on the calendar, and you are a cut gentleman.
Thank you.
My goodness.
Do you have other medical issues that arise from your condition, or is everything more or less normal, for lack of a word?
Got a lot of it handled when I was younger. I had a cleft palate, but they didn't know because it was inside of my mouth instead of outside on my lip. So I wasn't able to eat or talk for a long time, and I was fed through a cloth. And then we had a speech therapist come over, and she put a flashlight in my mouth, and she said he has a cleft palate inside of his mouth. So then we got that taken care of, and then I had hearing issues when I was younger, and I went and got my tubes done in the second grade. And then I also had suffered from short-term memory loss growing up. So I would learn something, and then by the next day, I wouldn't even remember doing it. And I just look at my parents like I was stupid or they were stupid. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I had never done this before. And they're like, no, we literally did this yesterday morning. But it was a huge struggle all the way up until sixth grade. And sixth grade, I was bombing every spelling test because I couldn't remember the spelling on them or anything like that. And then finally, I came home one day and I had 100% on my spelling test. And then from there on, I got 100%. I guess it just was a lot of practice and training. My mom would make me sit there and write my spelling words 3 times each in cursive and in print, just over and over and over. And I'd get so mad. I'd be like, why don't you make any of my other siblings do this? And she's like, because none of them struggle the way that you do. Practice is only going to make it perfect.
We were doing vocals for the record, and he was in a chair, and I was just in my chair. We were in the same room. And I was thinking, oh, man, as a producer, you're trying to think, how do I get the best version of what this person needs in the chair? Like, do I do a bunch of takes? Do I punch every syllable? And And I was worried about it because I hadn't figured out what Gabe's model was. Like, how is he going to be the best version of himself? And as I pushed harder and harder, I thought to myself, this guy's life is – this is nothing for him. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was able to push super hard. And we got a vocal out of him that could be a top five at radio. The song that we have done with radio promotion and with some sort of lightning and bottle coalescing could be a top 10 song. And it's like, this is from a guy who was unafraid and had never sung on a record before, right?
Yep.
Never been in the studio singing, and it's like, that's the kind of version that makes greatness. What's the difference between somebody who does something great and somebody who doesn't is the act of doing it, or at least attempting to do it. So I was blown away with it, and once I sat there and saw, man, this guy is not going to stop. I can push as hard as I want. This is like 1% of his load. So, you know, we just sat there. His pitch is close to perfect, and we just kept beating on phrasing and got a great vocal out of him.
That reminds me of the time I did a duet with Suzanne Vega.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not all about Gabe.
Please take the spotlight.
I went outside my comfort zone.
Frankly,
I don't think of myself
Adam,
as a...
Adam carried her the whole time.
...traditional singer. Max Panner might be able to find that.
Adam Carolla featuring Suzanne Vega. Yeah.
I know you've heard a lot of professionals. I don't know if you've heard me.
Well, I'd like to.
Yeah.
You got something worked up for me?
In the morning at the diner on the corner, I am waiting at the counter for the man to pour the coffee.
This is Suzanne Vega. It's not me.
Only halfway, and before I even argue, he is looking out the window at somebody coming in.
Do 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 do.
That's me.
I'm your home.
Hey, stop that. That's not the words.
Do 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 do.
It is always nice to see you, says the man.
This is Suzanne Vega.
This is
this now. Yeah. Then I bring. Then I kind of bring it up.
You should just take the credit.
Well, I think we can edit her out, can't we? There's enough space between them, so we just have me doing the do do.
And instead, I pour the milk.
Dr. Drew, do 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 do. I think you get the idea.
Almost all of those notes are in that song, actually. We're supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I know what it's like to push beyond the limits, you know what I mean?
You could have mailed it in. You could have.
I could have sat on the sidelines.
Was that one take?
Oh, yeah.
One take.
That was live. Yeah, that was one take and live. And, you know, we were in a broadcasting studio, but not a proper music recording studio.
Magic happens where it happens.
That's what I said to Suzanne. I said magic happens where it happens.
Was she there for that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's because it surprisingly sounded like an ISO, just of her vocal, right off of maybe the record.
It sounds, she is that good. Like, she is that present. And I think she felt the same about me. I mean,
yeah,
she didn't have to say it.
I could barely tell the difference between the two of you, and I've been in the studio for 30 years.
Well, that's why I was kind of labeling. I was like, "Oh, that's Suzanne," and then I would come in, and you know, God knows what kind of heights I could have soared to if I wasn't so committed to bringing people mirth. You know, which is really the ultimate. You know what I mean? I mean, a song, great, finger popping, toe tapping. You're in a good mood for a couple of minutes. Well, when I bring them the truth via my mirth, man, it changes lives.
What's mirth? Is that like frankincense and what was it brought to the Magi?
My comedy style.
The joy.
The look on
your
the
wares.
Faces. The look on the faces of the people in the crowd, especially the young people when I bring
You're great
my
at it, but it's not why you're here.
Yeah.
It's not why you were put here.
Right. So I could cut albums, obviously. I'm, you know, Suzanne Vega's got nothing on me, but I would be denying the people of my truth.
Your purpose.
My purpose.
Don't worry, Gabe. You'll get there.
You'll find my purpose one day. God willing. All right. Let me tell you about that. Capterra. Getting things done better, faster, and easier in 2020 with Capterra. Free website. Millions use monthly to find software for their business. So if you got a business and you need some software, I suggest Capterra. Few easy steps, identifying features you need. Use the smart search tool that filters, and you can find the right software for your industry. Then save your favorites to a short list and compare them side by side. Over 1 million reviews from real software users. Visit Capterra.com/podcast. More than 700 specific categories of software. Finding business software solutions can be tricky. Sign up for Capterra and make it easy for yourself at Capterra. Right, Dawson?
Visit Capterra.com/podcast free today to find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Capterra.com/podcast. Capterra, that's Capterra.com/podcast. Capterra, software selection simplified.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Gabe and Joe hang out. We'll do the news right after this.
ACS fans, get it on. The NFL playoffs are here, and you know what that means. We're getting closer and closer to that final Sunday of the season. You've heard Adam rant about pass interference, ball spotting, and field goal posts on the podcast. But now's your chance to experience it live. When you sign up for the newsletter at CorollaNewsletter.com, you'll be automatically entered for a chance to win an all-expense-paid trip to Los Angeles to watch the last game of the season in the Carr Museum with Adam and friends. That's wings, barbecue, plenty of endless rant, and hey, it's Hollywood, so who knows who'll be there? So get to CorollaNewsletter.com today. You and a friend may be flying out to the city of homeless angels to hear Adam rant live about the spread Sal made him bet on. CorollaNewsletter.com, tonight!
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
Joe, did you work with Warren Zevon?
I did. Before I moved to Nashville, I was working with a producer named Malcolm Byrne as an engineer, and he asked me to come down to make an Emmylou Harris record that eventually got nominated in 2002 for a Grammy.
Wow.
But Emmy sang a duet with Warren on that record, so it went onto his record. So that was my participation in the Warren Zevon record. It was the last record he had done, The Wind.
How was he to work with?
I did Emmy's vocal. So we did, that's one of those deals where they send you the tracks and we cut Emmy's part and went out to LA. He was pretty sick at that point from what I understood.
Mm. Emmylou Harris, quietly beautiful and doesn't get brought up enough. But
at least not in LA.
She's a good looking lady, man.
Is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of good looking folk.
She's a fine example of what to do with your hair when you're older.
Just let it kind of go its way.
It's silver, but it still looks great.
Yeah.
You know, don't do all the weird orange and blue and all the weird colorings and all the weird things where it's all dry and funkytown. She's a perfect example of what you should do with your hair.
She's gorgeous.
Yes. She is.
Mm-hmm. Voice like an angel.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of gorgeous people that have been in the news lately, the Daily Beast reports that Michael Avenatti, the lawyer who formerly represented porn star Stormy Daniels in her case against Donald Trump, was arrested Wednesday in Los Angeles. Now, not many details about the arrest have been made available so far, other than it involved, quote, potential violations of the conditions of his pretrial release. Avenatti is scheduled to stand trial in federal court next week on charges stemming from allegedly trying to extort Nike. Avenatti is also facing two other federal trials, one for allegedly stealing money from his clients and another for stealing proceeds of a book deal he arranged for Stormy Daniels. But that jaw.
Look at him. He knows what he's doing.
Competent.
That guy's being railroaded. He looks so bright. We should come up with a Mount Rushmore of the guys who look like they know what they're doing, but they don't. And then the guys who don't look like they know what they're doing. But they do. There's like football coaches that are that way.
Oh,
you know.
Oh, the John Gruden's on that mountain.
Right. Wait, he looks like he knows.
He looks like he knows what he's doing.
Does.
Oh, he's got the face.
He does. But he often, his record really reflects that.
Take her with that Super Bowl run, and it's not so impressive.
Yeah, Dick Vermeil reminds me of an older lesbian, but I'm trying to figure out whether he knows what he's doing or not. He's got a Super Bowl. It's funny because remember he sucked Garagus into all that?
His name got twirled around there.
Hates his guts now, but I don't. Garagus always seems kind of carefree. Mm-hmm. And so whatever jeopardy we thought he may have been in, he doesn't seem to think he is in. And I don't think he is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. What's the latest with Garagus?
That's why they say very few details have come out of this particular arrest. And I would imagine we could go straight to the source if he was available.
Yeah, I think the problem with Garrigus and as it pertains to Avenatti is I don't think he's allowed to talk about any of that stuff.
Gag order action.
Talk if he can.
He has things to say.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you heard about this the other day, but a plane returning to LAX on Tuesday morning after experiencing mechanical problems dropped fuel on a school playground, dousing the students at Park Avenue Elementary School in southeastern L.A. County. And apparently it did hit a bunch of schools.
Oh, Michael Moore's got to be pissed. Because I know the LAX flight track. Those are not rich white kids. Those are inner city black and brown kids, lower income kids.
Southeastern LA.
Yeah. That's a problem.
It's not good. The Delta flight was carrying 149 passengers. It was headed to Shanghai before it experienced...
Wow, that's a fuel dump.
Yeah. Before it experienced an engine problem, and they flipped it right back around to LAX. A spokesperson for Delta confirmed the plane performed an emergency fuel release to reduce landing weight before it headed back. At the school, more than 70 firefighters and paramedics showed up. They treated 17 kids and 9 adults on site for minor injuries, but they said the entire town just smelled like jet fuel. It was just dumped all over the town.
Well, if you're going to fly that far, you're going to need thousands of pounds of fuel, and jet fuel is just like a high grade either kerosene or diesel. That's why it always smells like diesel, like on the when you're walking on the jetway or whatever. So I'm sure those kids get enough of it with all the trucks and stuff going by, but they must have dumped thousands of pounds of fuel.
Yeah, and that's my question, because I mean, I guess it makes sense. By the time you get to where you're going, it's a much lighter plane, but it must matter that much? You can't land with it?
Well, easier to land, probably.
I think they're trying to mitigate everything they possibly can, and the lighter, the better. And also, there's a lot of less things to combust.
Right.
You know, if you think about the reason both those twin towers are down is they weren't taking planes that were going from Boston and New York to neighboring states. They were going cross country. They wanted full of fuel, much more to burn. Right. So I guess dumping it is the way to go.
But imagine playing Foursquare tetherball and looking up to the heavens. Just getting doused with jet fuel.
Yeah.
Tetherball.
Or sparking up a joint out on your porch.
The whole neighborhood goes up.
What happened to Ted? Well, you know, they say pot isn't dangerous, but I beg to differ.
I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. I mean, do they usually do it out over water? This is the first time I've ever heard of it.
It did not get very far. I mean, literally just did a U-turn and came back. So, yeah.
Seems like they try to do everything over water. Yes.
Just had a thought. If the plane was leaving L.A. for China, and we know how L.A. planes take off over the ocean, why are they over a school?
Well, this is why Michael Moore's pissed. Because they're brown and black children.
They were targeting them?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes, this under assault from the air. This is like Dresden.
There is, I don't know if you can Google it, Kaylin, there is a flight map of how it took off and how it circled back. But it just didn't get very far. It might not have even gotten over the water. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry. In order to land, it would have to come back on the land and come.
Mm-hmm. There's the whole route. And it took, 12 minutes?
I'd be the guy who got totally buzzed in the airport, passed out, and woke up 11 minutes later like, we're in China? Where are they already?
I feel so refreshed.
This is awesome. That was the fastest flight ever. Yeah.
Brian sent me this, Mike Lynch sent me this, and about 1,000 other people sent me this. We are talking about it. A man has asked an Iowa court to grant his motion for trial by combat so he can meet his ex-wife and her attorney, quote, on the field of battle where he will rend their souls from their corporal bodies. 40 years old David Ostrom from Paola, Kansas, claims in court documents that his ex-wife, 38-year-old Bridget Ostrom, has destroyed him legally.
Definitely not a Jew.
He asked the Iowa District Court to give him 12 weeks lead time in order to procure the swords that he wants.
Oh, he doesn't even have the swords?
No, he doesn't. He wants a specialty sword. Ostrom told the Des Moines Register that he got the idea after learning about a 2016 case in which a New York Supreme Court justice acknowledged duels have not been abolished. Ostrom said the motion stemmed from his frustration with his ex-wife's attorney, Matthew Hudson Harlan, and added that his ex-wife can choose her attorney as her champion or stand-in fighter, because I think he'd rather get a crack at him.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to work.
Oh, no?
No, but I do. I kind of like where this guy's head's at, although I don't know if I'd employ him. because I feel like almost every time.
No, a lot of dual challenges.
This is the part of the movie where the guy brings out the rule book. There's nothing in the rule book that says that a horse can't kick field goals.
Right, and then you bring in your attorney, Hassan Chop, and he's like from the Arabian Nights, you know, and he's all built, you know, and he's got the big sword hanging from his diaper.
Proxy.
And you're like, that guy, is that guy past the bar? Don't worry about it, buddy. Now let's get this duel going. Yeah,
it's all above board.
It's all about the duel. Hassan, yeah. Is your last name Chop, or they just call you Hassan Chop? Anyway, go ahead. Duel away.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I'm sure it'll go through.
Well, you know, my thing with the fencing is the most exciting sport in the Olympics, which is should be fencing, is like the boringest sport. You know what I mean? Like,
because of the tips at the end of the sword?
Yeah, more people watch curling than fencing. You know, curling is like you take a frozen ham and you slide across the ice and yell at your wife and she sweeps in front of it. Fencing should be the most. Yeah. It should be much better than 100-yard dashes or bobsledding or anything, but it's the boringest thing because they put them on tethers and they all put the thing in the tip and the foil and they all wear the same outfit and they got the mesh and everything. You should have to wear whatever the garb is of your country for the fencing. You know what I mean? If you're Japanese, you'd have a samurai thing going and you'd use that sword as well.
A steak knife.
Well, if you're thinking Ginsu.
For the Americans.
No, the Americans. Well, it'd be like cavalry, Civil War you'd wear that kind of custard, kind of thing or Indian War or whatever that is. Civil War, whatever the general would wear the sword, we'd have a little flexibility there. If you were like French, you'd be like a Three Musketeer type, big feather in the hat, the boots up high. Uh-huh. And we'd have the pageantry, what I mean? Like all the different crazy outfits
just
and everybody.
Alone,
yeah.
We find out who had the best sword,
right?
Real fast, I would tend to watch.
Yeah, that I'd watch.
Versus the two people dressed as a maxi pad with the scoring system and the... This is no good.
Yeah. And you know what? I think even just being able to see their faces would make it more fun.
Yeah, they're wearing...
Absolutely.
Oh, and then look, if you're worried about getting poked in the eye, then don't take up sword fighting.
Of all sports.
We all come to that fork in the road. Sword fight or don't sword fight? Like around 11?
Yeah.
Don't sword fight. If this is an issue of yours, then don't do it.
Yeah. Well said.
Mm-hmm.
So the votes have been counted, and the following have been elected for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Put that candelabra out there.
Oh.
You know, when it whoosh.
Of course.
Yeah, cut the candelabra.
Cut the flame.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah, you got to undo a woman's dress.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that snapper corset. Yeah, bodice. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and please chime in, Joe. You may have thoughts. Doobie Brothers.
Good.
Depeche Mode.
They finally got in.
Yeah, with two former elected members being deceased now, but yes. Depeche Mode.
No.
Whitney Houston.
Yeah, that's all right.
Nine Inch Nails.
No.
Notorious B.I.G.
Mm.
T-Rex. Doobie Brothers finished third in the fan vote. Remember, I believe Dave Matthews was leading the charge there.
Dave Matthews didn't make it.
Yeah, and he had over 1 million votes. And a lot of people, and this comes up every single year, but they're like, please just call it the Music Hall of Fame so we can get off the debate of who's a rock and roller and who's not.
I think we're sort of figuring that one out.
But is
just
it
officially
voted?
Changed the name. Well, they did have a category for fans to vote, and it was more of a publicity stunt, but it may have weighted some of the decisions.
Did Soundgarden make it? I hear you say them.
They were in the running, but no, they're not on my list. Ridiculous. I'll give you the full list here. Pat Benatar.
The nominees.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is the nominee list. Pat Benatar, Dave Matthews, Depeche Mode, Doobie Brothers, Whitney Houston, Judas Priest, Kraftwerk, MC5, Motorhead, Nine Inch Nails, Notorious B.I.G., Rufus featuring Chaka Khan, Todd Rundgren, Soundgarden, T-Rex, and Thin Lizzy.
Those are all the nominees.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know the finals were.
Doobie Brothers, Depeche Mode, Whitney Houston, Nine Inch Nails.
I hate Depeche Mode.
Notorious B.I.G.
What about
and
Todd
T-Rex?
Rundgren?
Yeah.
Hello, it's me, Todd. Hello. Sorry, it's a joke. All right.
Yeah.
Does Depeche Mode sing People Are People? Do they sing that song?
That's Depeche Mode?
In fact, yeah, I think so.
Okay, they're out.
I just think of personal
they're
Jesus.
Out. any wine rock, any make another, hit me, people love people. You're out.
Yeah.
You're fucking, that is not rock and roll. It's the opposite of rock and roll. It's the opposite. It's so bad, and it doesn't hold up at all.
Yeah. I can guess when this was made.
It's such non-music.
This has a little bit of that Janet Jackson synth that you hate so much.
It's tinny nothingness music. And then they start whining, like in the middle of it. I want to know what makes a man hate another. This fucking song is what makes a man hate another man. Yeah. So, Joe probably produced this, but still, it's so blah.
He did his best. He tried to clean
it up. Listen to the music. Like, you're out. You're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with this fucking fried piece of cat shit.
Sounds like the last song in Revenge of the Nerds.
Gabe, can you dance to this?
He wouldn't dare.
All right, it's so bad. It's okay.
You can't take
They're in. I hope they play this piece of shit just so everyone knows how bad they are when they're being inducted. They're gonna have to. It's one of their biggest hits.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Besides that, and personal Jesus, and what's the other big one? The big one. Oh, there it
Enjoy
is.
Enjoy the silence.
That's the right
song.
I don't mind this song.
Adam's come around.
We're back to zero, Depeche Mode.
Words are very unnecessary.
That's right. All right.
Okay. Dave Chappelle has joined the Yang Gang. The comedian has endorsed Andrew Yang in the 2020 presidential election. In a statement, the tech mogul says, "Dave is one of the most important voices in our country today, and I'm thrilled he has thrown his support behind this campaign." Chappelle will perform...
Everyone has to make every statement now has to be, "Dave is one of the most influential, important voices in our society." Unless he gets Me Too, then I'm out.
Never met him.
Signed, Andrew Yang. Okay, everyone has to put that at the end of every single That's compliment, right?
Yeah, he's going to perform a couple of shows for him. Other celebrities who support Yang are Donald Glover, Nicolas Cage, and Weezer frontman Rivers Cuomo.
A lot of range.
Does anyone know how Tom Steyer ended up on the Democratic debate and Andrew Yang did not?
Money.
Is that what it is?
I mean, he's... Yeah. Very
I think
wealthy
he just
man.
Bought his way in, but I don't know how it works.
Feels like Yang's more relevant to the...
I agree. I was thinking of him, and I was thinking about his $1,000 basic income or whatever, whatever that is. Which I'm not like. I was like, eh. But then he started hearing about him getting it from the tech companies, or basically using your information and profiting off it. And I was like, okay, well, that makes sense. Why shouldn't they pay for what they're profiting off of? But and we'll get him on the show soon. Max Bad is working on it. You keep working in the part where you're Asian, right, Max Spanish?
I'm late with that. Yeah, I need to hammer that home.
I started thinking about that, and I thought, well, I don't need the $1,000 a month, but some people use it, and they use it for whatever they use it for. But I was thinking about the concept of what he was talking about, but all we do is talk about health care, and people can't afford it, and these people should be responsible for it, and why don't you buy your own health care and some insurance care, blah, blah, blah. What about all this $1,000 a month, but you don't get to buy Twizzlers and lottery tickets? Yeah. It's going into your health.
Right, that's a great idea.
The tech companies go, we use your information. We make money and we profit off of your information. We don't share that profit with you. We'll now, to the tune of $1,000 a month, give it to you. The money will go into your healthcare account. And people like me who have healthcare and don't need the money, you can have my $1,000 into the lowest account. That make more sense to me, but
that sounds
we'll
good.
Ask him. All
That's
right.
knocking down a couple problems.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll stay on the music tip here. A new series of children's books is adding illustrations to some of rock's most famous lyrics. The series titled Lyric Pop launches this summer with its first four editions featuring lyrics of Fleetwood Mac's Christine McVie.
Please have Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
That's for the older kids. Twisted Sisters, Dee Snider, Mike Love and Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, Peter Tosh from the Wailers. Christine McVie's lyrics to Don't Stop were paired with images of a bunny encouraging her hibernating friends to come outside and celebrate the spring. Snider's picture book features images of stubborn toddlers refusing to eat, take a bath, go to sleep, all accompanied by We're Not Gonna Take It. And meanwhile, the Beach Boys' Good Vibrations depicts a girl and her dog enjoying a fun-filled adventure on the beach.
I like Dee Snider, but it's got to be a lot of work being him, right?
Well, putting all that shit on.
Because your hair crimped.
Yeah, like I was leaving the house today, and I was like, oh, man, where are my sweatpants? And I was like, oh, they're in the lawn. I don't want to go upstairs and get pants. So
what about your hot rollers?
The reason I'm wearing like pajama bottoms is because I'm literally too lazy to go upstairs and look for pants.
And possibly a pajama top, I've been wondering.
Probably, yeah. This is like, this is stuff that would gathered on my sofa.
Yeah, okay.
And upstairs is where the clothes were. And I was like, you know, I could go upstairs and dress like a human, or I could just put these pajamas on and leave the house.
It's
like,
good enough for
what
Gina
am I
Brian.
Doing? I'm not doing anything. I'm just watching employees eat tacos and yelling about Depeche Mode.
That's right.
What do I need a vest for that? So
3-piece suit.
But you think about Dee Snider, he's got to put all the silver on, you know, he's got to get the hair all crimped up, he's got to put the leather pants on, he's got to get the vest. He's a nice guy, but I mean, it's 2-3 hours where that guy can leave the house, right?
Yeah.
I would never paint myself into that corner. You end up
literally.
You sort of end up sort of like when like Bobcat Goldthwait does stand up and he's like, "Well, so let me tell you about my old lady." Like, do the voice,
be
the thing,
Police
be
Academy.
The guy from the thing, you know. And it's like, ugh. Dave Chappelle, you just put on a fucking wife beater and walk out there and tell jokes,
smoke a cigarette.
And light a cigarette and go, Yang 2021. But you don't, or 2020, but you don't have to, you know, don't ever get into that thing, right?
With the gimmick.
Well, you get paid for a while, but eventually you get older, and then it's a pretty big calorie burn.
You know who's pot committed? Kiss.
Oh, Kiss, right.
Even when they do their own thing, they still are, I mean, they're not in sweats. You know, they still dress up and get gussied up. God love them.
Oh, I couldn't imagine.
Work.
Like, the only bad part about doing TV is, like, you come home and you have the makeup on, and then you're
the
like,
pancake.
What am I going to do? And then, like, it'll wear off. Also, to be honest, when they put the makeup on you and you get a look at yourself in the mirror, you go, yeah, I like what's staring back at me.
Yeah.
Normally, it's a mess, but this is not too shabby.
Speaking of which, Joe, you work with a lot of Nashville guys, country singers and whatnot. Like, what percentage of them is the hat and the boots and the blah, blah, blah?
That's gone long gone, the hat and the boots.
No, now, it's not at all.
Like, not from Nashville?
I don't know why I said that.
Oh, yeah.
How much of it is an act? How much of it is, you know?
Well, there's a trend of folks. Like, I felt like I couldn't be on Music Row without a beard and a, you know, fedora for about a year and a half.
Yeah. How about the Brooks and Dunn guy that just says cowboy written on his arm?
Yeah, he's got a new record out.
Do you feel like
a little
thirsty? Like, hey, in case you didn't get the boots and the hat, I'm going to physically just write the word cowboy on top of me.
In case you didn't get the memo.
Yeah. I took my horse here, by the way. Like, we get it. You're into the cowboy thing.
It feels like high school a lot of the times. You know, it's like there's trans. Most people are really cool in Nashville, and there's a lot of great artists there, but it's got to share garbage. It's got to share really every. We're in a format that you can still have a song that comes out in it and it blows your mind. So I'm thankful for that.
That with a cowboy.
I wonder if he's a cowboy.
Right. He's got Linda Ronstadt's hairstyle from 1974. So I don't know how much that screams cowboy. But
I don't know Ronnie Dunn, but I think he's a cool dude.
Well, I know
probably.
He's a cowboy.
You must know him.
I wonder if he's a cowboy.
But, you know, like at least for a while, the style being very like Zac Brown Band, like kind of cool lumber sexual, like lumberjack guy.
I don't know. You know, I wear T-shirts. I saw myself in a picture of a T-shirt that my son had took whenever he was 4 years old, and he's 16 now. And I look at that T-shirt in my closet, and I don't think it's old. You know, I'm like, that's one of my go-tos. You know, that's a daily wearer. You know,
it's got to be a weird.
So I'm not in that. I'm not good at commenting on.
I wonder if there's a huge like a who's on first situation with Brooks or Dunn. Which one is he?
That Cowboy? Was Ronnie Dunn.
Yeah, Dunn going into the tattoo artist. Like, what are you looking for, cowboy? All right, who do you like, Roy Rogers? No. Cowboy. All right, no, you like the Duke?
Like a picture of a cowboy?
Cowboy.
Three Musketeers.
Right. Which cowboy? Oh, you're thinking like True Grit? It's kind of John Wayne or earlier John Wayne? No, cowboy.
You mean like Hondo?
Do we know what's on his other forearm? Is there another tattoo on that side?
I'd like to know what the other one says. Yeah.
You know, because there's obviously a moment where he's going to give you one of these, right?
And yeah, a little fist pump.
What happens when he does this on the mic stand? Is there?
Oh, yeah, give you the cowboy. Right cross.
This is a deep pull, Chris, if you can find this. God bless you. Do you guys remember the reality show that was around for one season where NXS was trying to find a new singer for their band?
Oh, yeah.
And one of the guys, I think it was the guy who went J.D. Fortune, he ended up becoming their singer, but in the he was such a spectacular flake. He was a perfect, weird personality for that show. He had two tattoos on his forearms, right where cowboy was. One said human, and one said being. And at one point, he said something along the, I'm going to mess it up. If we can find the clip, it's spectacular. Mm. Yeah, at one point, he goes, hey, man, like we're all just human beings.
And he put them together.
But at the end of the day, we're all just trying to being human. He flipped his arms.
Checkmate.
Oh, he was perfect.
Oh, no.
He was perfect.
I don't think we need to see that.
Well, maybe.
I messed up the verbiage, but you get the idea.
Maybe his other arm, when the one says cowboy, what if the other one said reverse? And there's a whole lot of homoerotic implications.
Yeah, rough trade.
I mean? Which would not work well with a lot of those fans, but would work very well for the select group of them.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Laser focus. Let's
do one more, Gina.
Okay, I will, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask Mr. West one question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you know what that
Dolly
question
is.
Have you worked with Dolly Parton?
I haven't, but recently a buddy of mine has been introduced me to her management, and I sit on the board of the Tennessee Arts Academy, and we're looking for a spokesperson, and we're looking for someone like her. You know, I've heard nothing but great things about her. Evidently, she owns Dollywood over there in East Nashville, which is kind of like a Disneyland.
Mm-hmm. Pigeon Forge.
I've heard nothing but really great things about her. And most of the country music, most of the people you know, sometimes you hate to meet the people that you really love because you don't want to lose respect for them. And I've heard nothing but great things, but I'd love to meet her.
Me too. Well, I got Jimmy Kimmel was nice enough, and Mike August arranged it when she was on the Jimmy Kimmel show so I could go sit in the green room. And she passed me, and my friend kind of pushed me toward her. Mm. And I freaked out, turned, and hightailed it the other way. I'm not worthy of meeting Dolly Parton. I just want to know about her. I want to enjoy her from afar. Okay, so speaking of news, we'll round it out here. Nearly 30 years later, Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit is still as popular as ever because, according to ABC News Radio, the grunge act's 1991 breakout hit was the most played song on rock radio of all of the 2010s.
Yeah, you know, when you talk to kids, I was just talking to my daughter's friends, like, what show do you like? She's like, I like The Office.
Mm-hmm.
They're like Friends.
It's 15
you know
years
what
old,
I mean?
Yeah.
When I was young, you know, people always liked the Beatles. Like, yeah, good is good.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. You should expose them to that.
And this comes from the end of decade report from Nielsen Music, which reveals that Smells Like Teen Spirit's 145,000 spins were the most of any song on mainstream rock radio between 2010 and 2019. Meanwhile, the song passed 1 billion views on YouTube.
All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
You were never born, and I was.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
AJ Benza's coming in tomorrow. Always funny, that guy.
Hot gossip. Bring
a pocket full of saffron.
First, Geico. Well, do you own, do you rent a home? Sure. You own or you rent, if you're listening. Hopefully you're a homeowner. You need some insurance. Well, let's bundle those policies with Geico. Makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing to do because you have so much to do already. There's one less thing to think about. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. Make it easy at geico.com today. All right. I told you to go to amcroll.com if you want to find out all my live shows and our documentaries and all that kind of stuff. Joe West and Gabe Adams. Now, Limitless Adventure Songwriting. It's available now on YouTube, but the page that would be easier for people to go to, Joe?
Inspired-docs. Inspireddocs.com. Inspired-docs. I made it so much easier by doing that. And the school is apprenticeacademy.net.
So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Gabe Adams, Joe West, Gina Grad, Bald Brian saying mahalo.
Magic happens where it happens.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. For tickets and info on all the live podcasts, man, three events, books, movies, and more, go to adamcarolla.com.